This year is shaping up to be pivotal for the finance sector. If you're a finance marketer, an agency working with a finance brand, or a media owner focused on finance, or you just love the economy, the one place you need to be this year is the Mumbrella Finance Marketing Summit. It's the one day that features major finance brands and agencies sharing their thoughts, strategies, and campaigns. This year's conference includes brands such as Yui, Amex, Unloan, Grapple, Australian Ethical, Finder, and an international marketer from Wise. It is just not possible to find more finance marketers in the same conference sharing their ideas. Early bird tickets end midnight Friday. Do not wait. The conference is on June 8th in Sydney. Book at mumbrella.com.au/finance. Southern Cross Austereo's chief executive Grant Blackley exits the business, and a new study finds that Australian marketers are grossly ill-prepared for the upcoming changes to data privacy legislation. Both of these topics discussed before an audio version of Campaign Review, where co-founder and creative partner at Coco Gun, Ant Melda, and chief strategy officer at VML Y&R, Alison Tilling, give their thoughts on recent works from Harvest Snaps, DoorDash, Carlton Draft, and more. Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Damien Francis, filling in as host for Callum Jaspin, who last we knew was strolling near mystical Mexican pyramids. Darcy Song has tried to start a rumor that he's about to be kidnapped by extraterrestrial life, but we'll move on from that. He will hopefully return to the Mumbrella Cast next week. But in the meantime, joining me for the news chat today, event content curator Diana DiCecco. How are you, DDC?
Hello there. How are we? I'm good.
Excited. We are very excited.
After that finance summit pump up,
right?
I'm really, really excited.
Could you pack in more marketers into a conference?
I don't think we could.
The answer is certainly no. It's certainly no. Also joining us today, podcast producer and reporter Kalila Welch. How are you, K-Dog?
I'm not too bad, thank you, Damo. How are you?
Apparently nowhere near as calm as you. You're very calm, you're relaxed, you feel like, it sounds like you are in control.
You know, I'd like to be in control, so that's good feedback. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, why don't we start straight up into the first topic of the week? Starting this week with very big news, SCA CEO and Managing Director of 8 years, Grant Blackley, announced on Monday that he will step down as leader of the company in June. Between now and then, he will oversee a transition of duties to his replacement, SCA's current Chief Operating Officer, John Kelly. Kalila, news that hasn't particularly blindsided anyone, really. There had been rumors circling for quite some time. If you aren't completely on top of what's going on, though, K-Dog, why don't you get us up to date with the facts of the situation?
Yeah, Damo, as you mentioned, Blackley is set to finish up in June, upon which John Kelly, who has been the business's chief operations officer, will take his place. And they are having a bit of a transition period there. SCA Chair Rob Murray has said that Kelly has been pivotal in leading the digital transformation of the group's business model, positioning SCA for future growth. So clearly they see a strong future under his leadership as well. He's been there almost as long as Blackley, since 2016, I believe. And before that, he was at the Football Federation of Australia for 4 years. And he's spent 17 years at Ten as well, crossing over with Blackley while he was there. In terms of what's happening on Blackley's side of things, he's yet to confirm where he'll be off to, but we understand he's planning to take a 3-month break to travel Europe, I think, after he wraps up at SCA, and he'll be potentially looking for an international media role after he signaled to MI3 earlier this week that he'd bought a home in Barcelona over in Spain. Good for him.
Great for him. I can't say I've been looking at Spanish property, but moving along quite quickly. Look, to be honest, it hasn't been a particularly easy run for Blackley during his time at SCA, has it, K-Dog? There's been arguably more downs than there have been ups.
Yeah. So, you know, on paper, it's not been a great time for SCA. And he also leaves the business halfway through its digital transformation that it undertook a few years ago. And I think that's penned to be finished at 2026, taking the business from its kind of analog roots and updating everything, which I'm sure has probably not helped the situation when we look at things like debt. And also he leaves the business at a market capitalization that is a third of its pre-COVID value. That figure now sits at $194.66 million, according to what I looked at today on the market. And the share price is at 80 cents. And it's worth noting that over the last year, the share price has dropped around 50% as well. So those aren't great figures, but it is worth noting that he did inherit the business with a great deal of debt. It wasn't in the best situation when he started.
Yeah, around $526 million, I think it was when he started.
A significant chunk of debt. He's worked it down now to $102.5 million, according to the last half year results from ending 31st December. But it was, when we look at the shorter term, an increase of 51.7% in debt year on year. I mean, at the moment, though, as well, he has been able to drive quite a strong focus on digital for the network, and SEA has emerged in quite a strong position with Listener. And according to those same 2023 half-year results, half-year financial results, Listener had 1.2 million signed up users, and digital audio for SEA was also on the up, with revenue growing 37.5% to 10.5 million. So on paper, not great, but definitely, you know, from the industry, seems like there's some potential for where it could go.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, a few headwinds. You've got to give him kudos for getting Listener out into the market, of course. And I guess when he did start in 2015, the share price was itself around the 78 cent mark when he started early 2015. He leaves with it at a very similar price. But of course, as you alluded to, late 2020, it was actually as high as $2.40, which was quite impressive. You know, and then there have been those other strong headwinds like breakfast for Today FM, for example, which was sort of the gift that kept on giving to the trade media as one show after another just came and went as they really struggled to replace the hole that was Kyle and Jackie O. But will be interesting to see where he pops up next, if it is indeed in our country or in another market. But like you said, SEA well and truly has the future plan locked up, and a bit of an overlap there to have a smooth transition. Righto. Up next, our Australian market is prepared for the imminent changes to privacy legislation. Spoiler alert, Arctic Fox, who ran a study on this, says it's a very hard no. A new report from advisory firm Arctic Fox said most Australian brands and marketing leaders are grossly ill-prepared, that's a quote, for the upcoming changes to data privacy legislation. In its Digital and Marketing in Focus study for 2023, the business found that less than one in four Australian marketing executives suggested that a focus on improving compliance with data privacy was a priority for the next 12 to 18 months. Marketing leaders also suggested that they were struggling to get their executive leaders to back digital transformation efforts, as well as secure investment for marketing technology. I should add that Arctic Fox is an advisory and consultancy business. DDC, our resident CMO, probably best to throw this at you. Are you shocked? You don't look it, I have to admit.
No, not shocked at all. Unfortunately, this rings very, very true. Privacy reform is probably not a marketer's highest area of priority, given the number of other things they have to do. You know, at the moment, we look at people operating post-pandemic, how they're comping on last year and previous years. They're looking at new channels to market. They're looking at shifting business priorities. So no, not a surprise. I do come with a little bit of bias in all of this, however. So I've certainly been watching the Privacy Act review process like a hawk. But I am aware that most marketers don't.
The problem here, though, is there doesn't seem to be a way out of it. Am I being overly pessimistic about this? But you know, we talk so much about marketers not necessarily getting the support that they need or not having a seat at the board table, et cetera. In this study, we're talking about, again, not having that C-suite support them or even understand the complexity of the issues. How the hell do marketers get themselves out of this? How do businesses get themselves out of this?
For starters, you know, the previous, so this report was previously called the Marketing State of Play. And if you look at that report over the past few years, there's no rosy picture that has ever been painted. So the increasing number of pressures that marketers are dealing with around trying to build brand purpose, understanding skills and knowledge, their MarTech stacks, these are all new components that some marketers have never had to address. I think the biggest challenge is educating senior executives on areas that are not yet legally required. So what we're looking at here is, you know, the recommendations that have been made, but the government hasn't actually responded yet with what reforms will take place. We know that the key areas of reform are going to be about how the Privacy Act is applied. We know that there will be an increased level of obligation for brands when handling personal information. And we also know that it is likely to expand individuals' rights. So there's a lot in all of that. My humble opinion is that marketers can't be left just to handball. You know, they can't just handball and say, hey, here you go, go and sort out the Privacy Act. I tend to believe that the approach here needs to be twofold. One, I think senior executives like MDs and CEOs really need to be better educated and informed about what sort of changes are coming down the line, not only from a marketing perspective, but for their businesses as a whole in order for them to comply. And then I think we actually need to join forces. So there needs to be an intra-departmental group that helps guide this. I think it needs to be led by legal departments to make sure that obligations are being met. And then I think the nature of marketing and IT departments, and in that I think should also be included, you know, those businesses that have digital sitting over there as a silo, that mm-hmm. needs to come in under that one umbrella of marketing. And all of those departments need to work together to understand their stacks, their obligations, what information they're holding. You know, so many businesses are actually collecting data they don't even need because they think it would be nice to have, or they think they're going to use it in the future. And I don't necessarily think that that's the appropriate way forward.
All extraordinarily sensible points, I would suggest, DDC. Unfortunately, we have to move on. Coming up after the break, an audio campaign review with Coco Gunn's Aunt Melda and VML Y&R's Alison Tilling on some of the latest big brand work.
Alison Tilling, Chief Strategy Officer at VML Y&R, and Aunt Melda, co-founder and creative partner at Coco Gunn. Thank you so much for joining the podcast for today's campaign review. How are you both doing?
I'm Ali, thanks for having me today. Doing really well, thanks. I actually live in Brisbane these days, and when winter hits in Queensland, it's pretty interesting. So yeah, it's a bit cool at the moment. I'm rugged up, which makes a change. But yeah, doing really well, thanks.
Oh, lovely. And I'm great. I'm really good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. It's really cold down here in Sydney too, actually. As we speak, I've got a blanket over me and my hands are barely functioning because of the cold air. It's all kind of changed in the last like 3 days, but we carry on anyway. So as you both know, the idea here is that we're getting something of a regular pulse check on the work coming from the Australian advertising industry throughout the year. So after a cracking month of work in March, including works from HCF, Ladbrokes, Belong and Furphy, 72 and Sunny's Andy Fleming and Inotion's Wes Hawes both said that the Australian advertising industry had gotten its mojo back. They both noted that they felt like Australian agencies and advertisers alike had felt more comfortable with taking risks and landing engaging yet simple pieces of intelligent advertising. So off the back of that, this month, we're going to take a look at 5 pieces of work from the month of April, and we'll see how they stack up, I guess. So I'm going to ask each of you to share your thoughts on each piece of work, and then you'll both be going to give me a rating out of 10. Does that all sound good?
Sounds good.
Yep.
Perfect.
Let's do it.
Let's get started. So we're going to start off with Harvest Snaps today. With Hero's new platform for the Calbee Snap brand. The new platform, Harvest Snaps Out of It, is the first major work Hero has done for the brand since being appointed to the Calbee account last June. Let's take a quick listen to that one.
Who wants hot chips?
Think good snacks can't taste better than the naughty ones? Harvest Snap Out of It. With a guilt-free, tasty five-star snack.
So, Alison, we'll start off with you. What was your take on this one?
Look, I liked quite a few things about this. There's a good bit of humour to these ads, right? And I love that. Like, I think that's something that that, you know, can work really well for a brand, and particularly in this kind of category where health is often quite a kind of, you know, it can be kind of quite dull and sometimes that kind of thing. Like, I think they've used humour well. I really like the scream, like as audio, like just these are quite short. They're quite snappy, forgive the pun. They've used kind of that bit of audio well. There were probably a few things that didn't sit as well with me. I think this talk about kind of being guilt-free, I don't know, I think that's kind of quite an interesting and potentially kind of quite a bold place for a campaign to play. But also thought it was interesting they don't have an eating moment. You know, they don't have that thing of somebody actually enjoying the product. So, yeah, kind of a couple of things to kind of get into, I guess. But I guess I'll hand over to Ant and see what you reckon first.
Yeah.
Oh, cheers, Ali. Well, I reckon there's one thing I really do agree with you on the eating thing. That jumped out to me. I'll tell you why. But before I say anything, I really do agree with Andy, the legendary Andy Fleming, that Australian advertising's got its mojo back. I'm seeing so many more pieces of work that I kind of either like or I'm jealous of or I'm laughing or all the things, which is awesome. So it's good to have some positivity. I'm not a massive fan of this campaign. I know what you're saying, Ellie, and I kind of like it's ticking all the boxes. For me, it's just not enough. It's not delicious enough. It's not memorable enough. It's not crazy enough. The scream's not loud enough. The post and everything's just not crafted enough. It's kind of almost there, but it's kind of I kind of thought to myself, in this kind of style, what would the Americans do? What would Old Spice do? It kind of slightly reminded me of the classic Old Spice Terry Crews stuff. And when they do it, they really go to 11. This one kind of has gone to about 6. It's kind of like, it's kind of funny and it's kind of crazy, but just not enough. And you know that famous stat about out of all the ads, 89% of ads are not noticed or remembered, and 7% are remembered negatively and 4% remembered positively. I just, because it's not been dialed up enough in terms of humor, in terms of all of the things, I just worry it's gonna kind of just be a little bit wallpapery. So
I'm afraid. Interesting. Like, I was going to pick up on, because I think it's really right to say, like, what would have happened to these if they really kind of dialed into, like, they've got this scream, right? Like, that is quite an interesting, as an audio moment, like, that is kind of quite, that could really be quite cool. So I think you're right, like, what would happen if they'd, like, really kind of turned the volume literally and metaphorically up on that, I think is really interesting. I was kind of, the line intrigued me. Like, the product is Harvest Snaps. This is Harvest Snap Out of It. I'm not sure it's really clear what I'm snapping out of, or it's certainly a lot clearer in one ad than another. And I was like, oh, I think for a brand with probably, I would imagine, kind of fairly low awareness, that was kind of quite, I don't think they're particularly well branded. And I think that line, while it's definitely got some, I like the fact it's got a bit of action to it. I like it's the idea that it's something that I'm doing. But again, I really would like to see more clarity on what it is I'm snapping out of, and like leaning into the tone that line gives a bit more.
Yeah, totally agree with that, Ellie. I love a line that's got the product name in. Like, I'm all for that. But that was almost like a good line in need of a different executional sort of way in for me. I totally agree with the scream as well. Like, I imagine these would look pretty good on paper, the scripts, but just in the execution of them, I just would have gone like, God, let's dial this right up. I mean, the bottom line, that's just me kind of quibbling with the post and the productions and the execution, but at the end of the day, and because it didn't have the eating moment, it didn't really make me want to rush out and try these. I just kind of go, well, yeah, I'm not kind of rushing down the shop to go, let me try some Harvest Snaps, which is, I guess, the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with what you guys are saying as well about not having the eating moment,
you kind of finish the ads not really knowing what you're going to be tasting. And that's kind of the thing that I guess with the category, you want to be leaving, you know, seeing the ad wanting to eat whatever it is. And I didn't have that moment.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Kalila. I think that's exactly right. And I reckon, like, it's actually quite a bold move, isn't it? But what I'm really getting from these ads at the moment is what I'm not choosing, not what I am choosing. Like, I'm getting snap out of this idea, you know. That could be a really bold way to go. But I think Ant's spot on, that the tone of the execution needs to be as bold as potentially that move is. And I think at the moment it isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, on that, what are your ratings out of 10? Why don't we start with you, Ali?
Oh, I'm gonna give it a 5. I think it could go somewhere. It hasn't gone there yet for me.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 4, but I think it could have been an 8 with a different execution potentially. But yeah, it's only a 4 as it stands.
No worries. Sadly. And moving on to our next spot, we're looking at DoorDash. So they've launched last month an NRL campaign from Howitson and Company titled Footy's Better with a Feed. And the spot starred retired NRL personalities Peter Sturlo Sterling and Paul Fatty Vorton. Sorry about the pronunciation. I'm not a football fan, I have to admit. But they're reuniting over a glorious footy feed. We'll give it a listen. Admittedly, it is on the quiet side, given that the creative concept is about the enjoying the silence of eating while watching the footy. But let's take a look. Taken by the fullback, who brings it back, beats one, steps two, three, they're off. Will they go all the way? Do they have the legs? It looks like they do. Okay, so, and we'll start with you this time. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this. I'm not a footy fan, so either I am a footy fan, but of the beautiful game, the real football, soccer, as we call it. But so the casting was a little bit lost to me, but obviously I get it. I really like the, I really like these. Like, intriguing, engaging, the simplicity. I'd loved seeing kind of a footy-based dad that wasn't just big blokes running around and commentary screaming and sort of all of that. And I guess they didn't have the rights for that footy, like for the footage, and they kind of turned that into a benefit, which I thought was really, really clever. Really, really liked the sound, design. Thought the performances were really slick, and you know, they worked well. The crafting was really beautiful. Like I say, the sound design great. Even like that when the end line came up, footy's better with a feed. I just love the way that it really been beautifully crafted on that end frame. So I was a fan of this. It's one sort of qualm, but I think it might be kind of addressed in other executions, in that it's kind of selling me that it's great to eat stuff, eat food, nice, delicious food while you're watching the footy, but I can do that with Uber Eats and, you know, 100 other people. So like, why DoorDash? I think there's some other retail kind of spots that might deliver some sort of RTBs around DoorDash, but you would need those to kind of, you know, to make me seal the deal.
Yeah, and Ali?
Yeah, that's probably my major quibble with this work. And also, like, just, sorry, total tangent, but I love the word qualm. We don't get enough qualm. And I do have a pretty major qualm, which is I think the words in some of the press releases and stuff were, we've got retail ads doing the heavy lifting. That always kind of sets off some alarm bells. So I think you're spot on, Ant. Like, there was a lot to like in this, and particularly in the context of where the ads are playing, the, you know, NRL, that kind of culture. I think doing stuff with silence, or quietness at least, is interesting. Doing things with those sounds of when they're eating, like almost a bit of that asthma effect, again, interesting. I personally would have loved to have that dialed up a bit. I think if that's the way you're going to go, especially with food where those sounds can be quite polarizing. Like, some people love that kind of that asthma type, get really visceral on what's happening. I was a little bit like, oh, is that kind of borderline gross, but that makes it sit in my head. So I agree on the executional things. I think it does stand out in the cultural context. My two qualms being the branding and this notion of kind of retail spots doing the heavy lifting. But also I think it's interesting in category, right? You've got Menulog, you've got Uber Eats, both kind of leaning into quite noisy and doing a lot with audio jingles or kind of international talent. I love the Aussiness of this, and particularly the line. Like, I love the feed. And I know DoorDash isn't an Australian company, but I like how they're kind of really building into some of that Aussie culture. But yeah, for me, it's probably the branding is what's kind of, on the basis of these executions, is what's letting it down a bit.
And it's interesting as well, I didn't mention before, but this one did launch, I think, the week or a couple of days after Milk Run, kind of all fell over. And so it is interesting just in that I know DoorDash is one of the other ones. I know they're all doing grocery, but DoorDash kind of started with the grocery space, I guess. So I wonder if that could be an opportunity for them to lean more into that story rather than kind of focusing on the meals themselves. But why don't we give those ones a rating? Sorry, Ant. What did you give it?
Yeah, I'm giving it a 7. I think I sort of, everything Ali says is completely valid. I hear you. I'm missing the kind of the arty bit. I'm missing, in a world where Milk Run's disappeared and Uber's shouting loud, it's like, why DoorDash? I want to know that. But just like everything Houghton and company do, it's just really beautifully crafted. Love that. So yeah, I'll give it a solid 7.
Yeah, with you, and I've upped a little bit to an 8. I'd love to see a little bit more of that asthma, do a bit more with the silence, with the sounds of the eating. But yeah, really well crafted, to your point, Anne.
Brilliant. Moving on now to Carlton Draft. And we're looking at the latest work created from Clemenger BBDO. This campaign was released a few months after CUB narrowed down its creative roster. And the spot plays on this imaginary kind of pageantry around the changing of the keg at a local bar. And let's have a listen.
3 Carlton Drafts, please.
Sure thing. The keg's dead.
Okay, so Alison, we'll start with you this time.
What did you think? It kind of slightly pains me to say this, because on the one hand, like this is a good proper ad, right? You know what I mean? Like, this is a proper ad. There's so many good things about this. I think it's well crafted. Like, I think it's got some great moments to it. I quite like that it is almost more an ad for the pub in a way, and I kind of there's bits of that I quite like as well. I just don't really feel anything for it. I don't think it resonates on a massive truth for me. And maybe that's because, like, when I go to the pub, which is rarer these days than it should be, like, it's not really mainly for, I guess, you know, I do drink a bit of beer, but like, these keg moments kind of haven't figured largely in my pub experience. I don't know, maybe it's that. Like, I can see, it's not that I don't see that there's a truth to this. I don't, the way that truth has been, or that insight's been kind of brought to life, I don't connect with it. I don't feel a massive amount for it, even though I can see some of the good aspects of this from an advertising point of view.
Yeah, and you, Ant?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Ali. We might have to have an arm wrestle here, because I love this, but actually we don't need to have an arm wrestle, because I think it's do that anyway. I think it's like, you know, that sort of old phrase, I think it's a Nine In said, like, we don't see the world the way it is, but the way we are. It's like, for me, I am a, just a quick sort of a political rant. I'm a staunch anti-royalist. I can't stand any of that stuff, the pomp and ceremony and the nonsense and the $2.8 billion crown jewels and all of that stuff just gives me the absolute shits. Don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but so anything that kind of pokes a bit of fun at that kind of nonsense, it's talking to me. Also, this for me as an English person, this is kind of coming from a hello genre of great Aussie beer ads, and it's kind of such a privilege and such a high bar to kind of even get anywhere near some of those amazing, you know, ads of yesteryear, the sort of the canoe and the big ad and Han super dry and all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of it's a privilege to be able to work on that brief, and then it's kind of the pressure to kind of deliver. And then also like the great canon of those beer ads, like Canoe, probably the best ad, one of the best ads of all time. That line, made from beer, is probably my favorite ad. And I just love that little Easter egg, or not an Easter egg, but the way they've kind of kept that made from beer thing. So I love all that about it. There are loads of nice little touches, like you said. I kind of like, one of the things I've got is that when you kind of chop this down to a 30-second ad that ordinary bloke watches rather than the 90 that advertising people watch, all of those nice little Easter eggs are going to disappear. And like, is it going to work in that kind of 30-second world? But I don't know, just as an ad, I love it.
Yeah, and I think, like, sorry, just to pick up on a bit of that, because I kind of got quite excited as you were saying some of those things. So first of all, totally with you on the anti-royalist thing, like, and so I do like that kind of puncturing humor, definitely. I suppose I think the points about execution are spot on, and there's like most of me, I think my take on this, right, is that I really like it and find a lot to admire in it from an advertising perspective, but I want to love it and I don't love it like I love some others. And like I say, like, I'm struggling a little bit with why that is. And I think maybe it is your point, Ant, about kind of seeing things, you know, as we are. Maybe that's just me. But there certainly is, like, this is a bit of a return to form. And I think the, like, for beer advertising generally, I would say, like, this is a good kind of step to that kind of classic canon. And the made from beer, like, I agree, that's one of the great lines. And to see that kind of used here in a way that absolutely makes sense, like, it doesn't feel like that's too crowbarred in either. So that was definitely a good point about this.
Let's give it a score, guys. We'll start off with you, Alison, and then Ant, you can jump on after that.
Yeah. I'm going to say, like, Ant's like reunited me with some of my positive feelings about this. I was going to go with an 8, but I'm going to up it and I'm going to give it a 9.
Oh, yes. Hooray. Hooray. I think it's that for me is kind of coming in the context of as an English person, but as like anyone that sitting through that Queen, the Queen's funeral, and kind of just ordinary people sitting there watching that for hours and queuing for days and like looking around and going, you too? And they're like, oh no, it's, you know, it's like, oh my God, this is crazy. So that in that context, in that recent context, it kind of worked really well for me. I'm giving it a 9 as well.
Beautiful. High scores. Love to see it. And now we will, in fact, move on to the Reject Shop, our second last spot. And this one was created by Thinkabell. It's a new brand platform for the retailer, and it's actually their first campaign in, I think, a bit over 9 years. So they've had a quiet last decade. But the new platform, Rethink the Reject Shop, introduces a bit of humour to the brand, and it pitches customers imagining how the retailer manages to have such low prices. So let's give it a quick listen.
Same low prices last week. But how? Maybe they've cracked the art of bargaining with big brands.
And, Ant, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I thought there's some things to like about this. I don't love it, but I do like it. I've kind of had a little bit of a quibble, not even a qualm, a quibble this time, Ali, just in terms of the strategy, because like you said, Khalil, it's been like 9 years since they've kind of been out there in the world. And like then this idea of, was it Rethink the Reject Shop? I kind of, because they've been off the radar, I hadn't even thought about them to sort of reject them in the first place and then rethink them. I just kind of, for me, it was more of why don't you consider would have been the sentiment rather than you've rejected it and now rethink it. So I don't know. But having said that, I think like the executions are quite good. I think there's a bit of a challenge there that Audi have played so brilliantly, cleverly and consistently over so many years in that kind of executional tonal area. And it's going to be hard to ever kind of beat the good different work that those guys do. And then in terms of, it's a little bit like what I was saying about the first one, the Harvest Snaps one, I would have kind of gone even crazier, like dialed it up even more. Like I kind of, that idea of going into someone's head and seeing the thought process inside someone's head, like we've seen that, you know, that's kind of a genre. So I would have thought once you're in there, like go even madder. So I quite like the second one that I watched, which was where the brought out the comb. The first one with the handshakes was kind of a bit like less, I don't know, I would have pushed that further and just tried to be a bit madder, basically.
Yeah, I really don't think this works as good as it should be for me. I really don't. I think, so Rethink the Reject Shop has a lot of potential. I think that's clever. I personally quite like the alliteration of it. I like also that, like, Rethink is an interesting word in this context, right? And for a brand like this, I think it actually does some work to elevate the brand. Like, this is a brand that I actually need to think about. But then the tone kind of makes that not too intellectual. Like, I think that's quite clever for me. But then it all starts to fall apart for me. So your Aldi point absolutely resonates. And this hasn't gone far enough into tone. I don't think it's decided what tone it's got, to be completely honest. But I think there are deeper problems here. Is this an ad that is about everyday low prices? Or like, is this a campaign that's about everyday low prices? Because if it is, like, it needs to own that a lot more clearly, even on an art directional level. Is it an ad for the Reject Shop or an ad for something called Rethink? Like, some of the art direction, the Rethink is so elevated over the brand itself. And to Ant's point, like, this is something that has not been in the kind of, from a marketing point of view, hasn't been out there on people's radars for a while. So I think there's some problems there. And I think that this type of humour has been done a lot better quite recently by other brands. And sorry if that's brutal, but I think it has. And the sort of thing about, like, are they good at bargaining with big brands? Like, it's just not something that a shopper, I don't know that they would think that and that leads anywhere kind of creatively interesting. So for me, potential in the line. Beyond that, currently not a massive fan.
Yeah, no, that's fair, Ali. I hear you. I was kind of thinking the bit where it goes into the head. I was kind of thinking, does anyone actually care about how you get to these prices, or just give me the prices? For me, that's why I thought the out of home worked a bit stronger. I hear you about the art direction and the Rethink, but when I just kind of, not as an advertising person, but just as a person, walk past that, and I think it was in Broadway or whatever, Westfield.
Yeah.
They're really bold and beautifully designed. And I was like, oh, okay, Reject Shop, it's cheap. It's got, and it's on floor three. I thought they were quite strong.
See, I agree on that. And I think what's kind of, for me, the interesting part of this, and I do go in the Reject Shop a bit, right? I'm not what you'd describe as a regular shopper there, but I do go in there, you know, occasionally. It's that fact of having the big brands that to me is kind of almost the interesting part of this. So then, but they've got this everyday low prices, which is owned, like, I mean, Aldi does pretty much own that historically. Coles and Woolies have obviously, and several other brands, you know, Chemist Warehouse and so on, have obviously got on that bandwagon, so to speak. But like, what's being owned? Like, I think maybe the thing that people are rethinking is actually the quality of brand that is in the store versus kind of this everyday low price. And I think they just need to make some decisions about that.
And so, guys, what are your ratings for this one? Ant, do you want to give us yours first?
I'm giving it a 6.5. Am I allowed a 6.5, by the way?
Yeah, that's all at that.
Awesome, 6.5. There we go.
It's a 4 from me.
Okay, and now we have our final campaign for today from a newcomer, Superloop. So they're a new telco company on the Australian scene. They've worked with Leo Burnett, and it's their first Australian campaign, and obviously Leo Burnett's first work for the brand. The creative makes a nod towards meme culture with the spot featuring NFL player Anthony Spice Adams. Let's give it a play.
Hey, you ever feel like someone's watching you?
Why would anyone want to watch us laying subsea fibre optic cables to upgrade our internet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mmm. Yeah. Mmm.
Okay, I'll stop that there. okay, so Ali, final campaign for the day. What is your take?
So this is one, I reckon this has got loads of potential as a platform. Like, I think this idea of refresh your internet, like there's loads of places you can take it. I think the tones, like I quite like this kind of slightly, I don't know, there's kind of a dumbness, almost like a silliness to it that I kind of find quite charming, particularly in the category. I think that like the Anthony Spice Adams, look, I have to be honest and say I didn't know who he was. That's probably bad on my part, but I do now, and I think the yellow suit and the way they've used him for what he's famous for, I think is actually pretty cool. Didn't love the way it's been executed so far, but I think there's definitely potential here.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Ant?
Yeah, I agree with some of that. I really, really like the execution, but I've got massive questions about the strategy here. It's like this is such a tough market, you know, really, really tough market. So if you're coming in as a new player going up against the big guns, like, what are you actually bringing other than like Anthony Spice Adams is kind of funny? So, and it might be there's other executions down the track, and then I'm kind of wary of Ali's kind of call about, oh yeah, that's all going to be delivered in the retail spot somewhere else. So I wasn't seeing enough of that. But having said that, what I did see, I think the line refresh your internet is really, really good, really, really strong, really ownable. The whole vibe and the whole tone, I think there's definitely a place in the boring world of where Optus and Telstra and all those guys are gone. There's definitely a place for this kind of meme-y, kind of it reminded me a little bit of in the UK there's a telco called Three that have got a campaign called Built for the Internet where they just lean into all the crazy shit and all the funny stuff, and like there's space for that, and then bringing in Anthony Adams, and like I really loved his thing that he keeps saying, really, really memorable. So all of that was like, yeah, all of that was making me laugh. I just then wanted them to go, and not only do that, but we actually give you three times faster or something, that's like then you would seal the deal rather than just making me smile.
Yeah, and something that actually is a refresh of the internet that I as a consumer care about versus kind of the wires and the fiber optic sort of story. I feel like that's kind of A, been done, but also maybe wasn't kind of from a strat point of view. I don't know if they kind of lent into that the right way almost for these spots, but yeah, agree on the... I think as a platform there's lots of places you could take that, and coupled with that tone that does kind of stand out in the category, as I say, it's more my enthusiasm is probably more the potential of it, but I think where it is now is kind of pretty good and there's lots to build on.
Yeah, I reckon if they could unearth some like some USPs or some product points that are like actually good, but I don't think that's the agency's fault. There may not be anything that's any good, you know, so you're just sort of working with what you got. It'd be great if there was something different about it. But again, this one I just thought was really, really well polished and crafted, like the art direction, the out of home, the, you know, really the design, really, really good.
Yeah, agree on that. And I loved how they've kind of done some really good kind of integrated channel thinking, like that it's not matching luggage here, like it has been really thought according to where each execution is and the strengths of each channel. So I really liked that as well.
Awesome. Okay, let's take it away with our final ratings for the day. Ali, what did you give this one?
I'm giving this an 8. And it would be probably like a 7 for where it is now, but I think with that potential I spoke about, I'm going 8 future facing.
Beautiful. And you, Ant?
I'm going 7.
Awesome. Wrapping up, any final thoughts? It looks like our favorite campaign of the day was the Carlton draft, but we had a bit of a mixed bag. Any final thoughts you guys wanted to add
in? I was just going to add that across all of these, or most of these, it was really good to see some fairly representative casting. It feels like we've kind of moved away from that sort of very generic one-size-fits-all casting that we kind of, even 5 years ago, we were still seeing. But now I'm loving seeing the variety and the diversity of ethnicities and ages and all sorts of things across just a random selection here of work from Australia.
I agree with that. And another thing I loved about this particular selection was that there were some really interesting takes on audio in this, like some really different ways, like some using quietness and silence, some using kind of those sound effects of eating, some using that, like that scream. And yet there's probably some, you know, dialing up or whatever else, but I thought that was a really interesting aspect of these as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. Appreciate your time and your thoughts as always. And I look forward to seeing you guys next time.
See you soon. Cheers, Ali.
See you. Cheers, Ant. Thanks so much, Kalila.
That's all we have time for today. Thank you for listening to the Mumbrella Cast. Throw us a follow or subscribe if you're enjoying it. And for more podcast content, we'll be back tomorrow on the Evening Mumbo. Check out that separate feed. A big thanks again to Ant and Alison for joining, and also for the Mumbrella crew, Diana and Kalila. Thanks for joining us.